Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
All right, if you haven't already, you should subscribe to Willard and Dibs on the free Odyssey app. It's good stuff on there. You should check out Kevon Looney jumping in on the crossover yesterday, for example.
Pretty fun.
Really fun. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, while you're there, do it for the other shows as well. Steiny and Goo and Bonte and Joe. And again, you can subscribe to all, get all the content. Mark Clareth will be along here in less than 15 minutes. A lot to do today because we're heading for an NBA Cup game as well.
It's big.
Tonight here at Chase Center.
Yeah. Yep.
Do they use the exact same floor again or do they surprise us again?
Not same floor.
Same gray floor. Yep.
Yeah. Don't look too far ahead, but the Niners Warriors got a pretty nice path to win this group here. If you look ahead,
how does it work? You said don't look too far ahead. I'd like to.
So you got tonight against the Grizzlies without Ja Morant,
no Ja,
Desmond Bane, and Brandon Clark both questionable.
Still a dangerous team. Yeah. They've got a winning record.
You're at home. You feel like you should be able to win this game.
Sure.
Your third group stage cup game is a week from tonight in New Orleans.
Okay.
Pelicans are maybe the most injury-ravaged team in the NBA right now. You should be able to take care of that. And then the only other group stage cup game you have left is against Jokic and the Nuggets. Coming up after that. If you're 3-1, you're likely going to win your group, and if not, you'll probably be one of the two wild card teams that advance to the next stage.
Which is that's in Vegas?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah, semifinals are in Vegas.
Six group winners and then two at large. You have the eight quarterfinalists, then the semifinals and finals are at a different place.
Do understand that by the time the public understands what the hell's going on, this will not exist anymore. Just a prediction. Cuckoosh.
Don't steal.
Okay?
Don't steal.
Cuckoosh.
Not only will it exist, but there'll be another equally contrived and cockamamie structure within the regular season that will also exist.
Did you see that they're talking out a cockamamie structure for the All-Star game here in San Francisco in
February? And I love it. Tell the people what you told me during the break, because I love this idea.
Well, what they're saying, and I actually don't hate it either, although I don't know exactly what the details are yet, but there was a competition committee meeting today, and what was discussed is a four-team tournament at All-Star Weekend, and it would consist of three teams of eight All-Stars, and then the winner of the Rising Stars game. And those four teams would play, I believe you like to call it a cockamamie side tournament.
Yeah, little tourney.
Yeah. Now, I'm not saying that this would, like, supplant the actual All-Star game.
Oh, I bet it would.
Maybe.
I bet it would.
Maybe.
You're not going to get Steph Curry, for example, to play two of these cockamamie tourney games and then play the All-Star game. This would supplant the All-Star game.
That's great. Then supplant it. Nobody cares because last year was literally offensive.
I loved it. I had the over.
My hope for this cockamamie tournament, this is only my one hope.
Thank you. Cuckoosh.
I really, really hope that what they do is that they grant the winner of the four-team tournament extra money. That's what I, as a fan, really want. I badly, badly, badly want NBA All-Stars, most of whom are making north of $45 million per year. I hope and pray that the winner of this four-team tournament gets a cash reward.
Yeah. Major bag alert. It's actually minor. It'd be a minor bag alert for them.
I hope.
I'm sensing a little sarcasm in that, but whatever it is, if it makes it more of a competitive day for those of you who need a competitive day, I love the 192-188 format. It's fun.
It's really not.
I enjoy it.
I mean,
you don't get to tell me that I don't enjoy it.
No, you can. Yes, you can enjoy it.
And I'm not alone.
You might be. I don't know a lot of people who liked that, but I mean, yeah, you're allowed to. You're allowed to love it. That's absolutely true. All right, Mark Slayer is going to join us in 10 minutes. Look, we don't like elephant in the room type stuff. So, we definitely wanted to address this. I don't want to go on and on with anything about the quote state of the industry, the dying industry, all of this stuff. I largely reject that other than the obvious, right? I mean, there are so many industries, especially post-COVID in America, that are really, really struggling. And, you know, purse strings get tighter and all of that stuff. And I understand that. And all businesses evolve, just like ours is as well. What happened, not just in Bay Area radio, although that's what matters most to us, but also, I mean, iHeartMedia did this just a week ago. And so I can't even tell you. I don't even know if I can count how many friends of mine lost jobs just within the last week. And there are a lot of them where it's like really troubling for them on a personal level. As far as Tom Tolbert and John Lund, both personal friends, both wonderful people,
yeah,
both wonderful, wonderful radio hosts. I'm thankful, I think, for them. I don't want to speak for them, but they're going to be okay. They're going to be okay because they've done very well in life. Plus, they're going to have options to do more. But so all I'll say is just that, you know, days like this are not like fun for the competitor. I do want people to know that. I do also want to say that if you are new to our station or this particular show because you're out and about checking things out, we want to extend a very, very hearty welcome to you. Hope that you hang out for a while, like what you hear, interact with us, let us know. Thumbs up, thumbs down, you stink, stop doing that. We love you. This is new. We found it, whatever. Just want to say a special hello to each and every one of you. At the same time, my thoughts are with everybody who went through this over the last week, last year, last 5 years, and I have no doubt there will be more around the corner as well. But the only thing I want to point at is what I said in the crossover. The real thing to be frustrated about here is not that there are layoffs in an industry. It happens everywhere, all over the place. The real frustrating part is that every time this happens, there are fat cats that won't even take a dollar off their salary. And it doesn't even occur to them that maybe that might help the financial woes that any particular company is facing. That's what's frustrating to me, because those fat cats, it's not even about guys like Tom and John. It's about you. It's about you listening.
Yeah.
It's about your options. It's about your entertainment. It's about your fun that gets taken away from you so that people in high corner offices can keep their full salary. And I think that sucks.
It does, but let's not pretend, and I'm not saying that you are, but I do want to point out that that happens in every business and every sector across every part of our country. And if you take a restaurant and you've got a restaurant that's having a hard time making ends meet, the owner isn't going to take less of a profit share. They're going to fire two cooks and a maitre d' and a waiter and a busboy and say, all right, we can make it with a smaller staff and I'm still going to get what I have coming to me. And that's our company, their company, it's every company. So for me, it's more about two things. One, what you said about Tom and John is absolutely spot on. And I actually talked to John Lund yesterday, and he reminded me of the time that I called him before he started his first shift on this station. And he actually was he and Greg Papa before 2011 in the launch. And I called him and, you know, hey, this is Dan Dibley, and I've been hired, and I hear you're coming in, and just wanted to get to know you. And he said it was really, he was touched by the fact that I called him 13 years ago to just try to make him more welcome at the station. And for Tom Tolbert, I worked over there, you know, 15, 18, 20 years ago. And so for me, working with Tom and around Tom was a thrill because I grew up as a Warrior fan when he was a Warrior and he's 5 years older than me or whatever. And so I've kind of followed his career from Arizona all the way through. So that part definitely touches me personally. And the other part of it is, and I'm going to speak for you and I'll speak for a lot of us here, competition is good, and having them around is good for everybody because a rising tide lifts all boats. And so when they're doing well, when sports is compelling and people are listening to sports, they win, we battle, and it's good. So I'm not sitting here gloating over that loss and whatever changes they're going to make. I have no idea. I'm just sad because the industry is better. Our market is better when there is two baseball teams and there's not, two football teams and there's not, two sports talk stations, and there kind of still is, but their station is different now. And so for me, it feels a little bit like when the Raiders left and when the A's are leaving, where the market is a little bit lesser because you don't have two strong brands.
Yeah, I think that's all really, really well said. And I'll just put a cap on my thoughts on circling back to two things, because I do know that all of many of you listen to all of the stations and all of the people through all of the years, but what you don't ever really know is, okay, who are these people behind the scenes? Tom and John, and actually, by the way, two other people who are completely off air,
yep,
who lost their jobs the other day as well, they are all absolutely just, they're exactly who you think they are. They are delightful, fantastic, professional, talented, kind people. And so there's that. And then I again just want to say again, to anybody who might be here, who knows, maybe for the first time, hello, welcome.
Hello.
And we'll do everything we can for you.
Yeah.
That's all.
And we're saying hello even though you didn't call us. And, Guru, as Guru said earlier.
You can, though.
Well.
We have a phone number.
Don't do that to Guru.
888-957-957.
Wow. I can't wait to call Guru, and when he answers, I'm just going to burst out hello and see what he does.
Oh, no.
That's totally right.
I hate myself that I haven't thought of that yet. We should have done that.
Yep.
We should do that on the air.
I might right now during
That's
the
not
break.
Not a bad idea at 5 o'clock.
Shut up!
Yeah. All right. Warriors are back in action tonight. Grizz, 7 o'clock. It means Warriors live with, Mark Grandy. Hi, Mark. You got a job later tonight, huh?
Hi, Mark.
Okay. 6 p.m. presented by Xfinity. Stream sports from the best seat in the house with Xfinity. Bring on the good stuff. And we're sponsored by LifeSource Water Systems. Mark Schlereth is going to join us next on Willard and Dibbs.
Now, back to Willard and Dibbs.
Mark, do you have to be a homer?
Well, Brian, you have no idea.
Well, hold on a second.
On 95.7 The Game.
Oh, yeah. We're streaming live on a Football Friday. Twitch and YouTube. Twitch.tv/95.7TheGame. YouTube.com/95.7TheGame. It is all powered by First NorCal Credit Union. Are you ready to dive in a little deeper on this?
Let's do it.
And one of the things we've been talking about is whether or not the Niners this year have actually earned the contender label. And do you buy in when someone says to the team, well, hold on, they haven't beat anybody? What does that mean to you? We can weave stink into that conversation. We go out to the River Islands guest line, joined by Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stink and Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Hey, Stink, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. How would you answer that question? Have the Niners earned the contender label this year or not at 5-4?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I think everybody sits and says, hey, with Kyle Shanahan, with the talent that you have, especially on the offensive side of the football, yada, 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 with the history that the 49ers have, yeah, they've earned that over time. They've earned that contender label. And I think you look at some of the losses, look at some of the issues they've had with the injuries and everything else, you can excuse them. I mean, you look at, in your own division, you've lost to Arizona, you've lost to the Rams, so obviously that's not good. But the bottom line, you sit there and you're one game behind Arizona for first place. And the bottom line to me is you're probably the best team in that division. And, if you get on a hot streak and you're getting healthy, and obviously you kind of cure what ails you in the red zone, and we keep thinking that Christian McCaffrey is going to do that for you, then all of a sudden I think you're one of the top, four teams in the NFC. I mean, I would put Detroit number one, probably Philly number two, and then after that, I mean, San Francisco would be right in there. So I think that's kind of how I look at them.
Looking at the red zone issues so far to date, and I know just one game of McCaffrey, and they didn't really solve it in that 1 week, but do you think that he can be the fix for what ails them in that red area?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I mean, and one, just from a check down standpoint, what they can accomplish with him, the pressure he puts on a defensive coordinator, what you have to account for. And not only running the football, but with him being able to spread out, he and Debo being interchangeable pieces, putting in a what you know, a lot of times what we call 21 pony, which is two tailbacks in a backfield as opposed to a tailback and a fullback. Like, it gives them so many different options, and he's so good out of the backfield. Obviously, he's a great running back. He's great, you know, in and out of you know, whether it's a wide type of play or whether it's between the tackles. He's great at all that stuff. But the passing game, to me, is where you have a decided advantage with Christian McCaffrey. And I just think that, you know, I think those red zone issues, they've been one of the top red zone teams in football until this year. And I think those issues will eventually get solved here. And I think, I mean, obviously we nationally on talking on the shows that, you know, that I do on Breakfast Ball and everything else, we've talked about the Deebo Samuel, you know, Tabor Pepper dust up on the sideline and stuff. But I think a lot of that is the own frustration of how piss poor you guys have been in the red zone and haven't been able to accomplish things. And I think some of that just explodes over, you know, when your field goal kicker's missing field goals. And a lot of that anger is probably, you know, is actually your lack of production in the red zone. So I think all those things will iron themselves out over time.
Stink, since you brought it up, I think our audience would love to know what your take was on the Deebo Samuel Tabor Pepper dust up.
Yeah, you know what? Ultimately, like, you never want that to happen. That it's not a good thing. But ultimately, you'll deal with it. Like, Kyle was a part of, you know, the Broncos. He's probably 12, 13, 14 years old when we had a situation where we went to San Francisco. Now, it wasn't teammate crime, but where, you know, Romanowski spit in J.J. Stokes' face. And that's in 1997 game. And that ripped us up in the locker room a little bit, man. There was a lot of racial tension. There was a lot of tension about that particular play. Mike Shanahan called us into a team meeting. We sat down at that team meeting. A couple of guys aired their grievances with Romo. Romo stood up and apologized like a man and said, hey, man, that, you know, it just was one of those heat-of-the-moment things, and, you know, what I did was wrong. And, like, he accepted that responsibility. And after that, we moved on. And, you know, I think people would be surprised kind of you know, it's a bunch of alpha dudes, you know, that play professional football. Huh. And some of the fights that go on during the course of a week, you know, and you get into, like, it's part of the program, so to speak. And you don't want it to happen, but occasionally it happens. And I think it's happened to every one of us where we've gotten in the dust up. It just hasn't been on film. So, you know, we used to have a rule when I played in Denver. And, you know, we'd be doing one-on-ones or whatever the case may be. And you know, the backups would be in, and we'd be kind of standing around the water jug, you know, getting water and watching one-on-ones. And if a fight breaks out in practice, the guys upstairs or the guys that the film guys are told to cut the tape off, right? Because they don't want that getting out. So they cut the tape off. But it takes a minute to, you know, to realize, oh, it's a fight. So we had a rule, if a fight breaks out and you didn't get in the film frame before the film guys cut it out, and if you weren't throwing fists when that happened, like, you're getting fined, and it's a significant fine. Like, you damn well better get in there and, you know, punch one of the defensive guys. And that was that's a rule. That was a rule on our football team. And so it doesn't necessarily, like, those things, I think, for the general public are, like, earth-shattering. Like, oh, my God, there's got to be real problems there. But I think in the overall scheme of things, the football team, you talk about it, you discuss it, people apologize, and you move on. And I don't think it's really that big a deal.
Is part of what squashes this the notion that kickers they're a necessary evil on a football team, but are they seen as maybe second-class citizens in the locker room?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, they're
oh, yeah.
part of it's jealousy. Like, you're over there, you're playing and you're busting your ass and you're practicing, and especially in training camp, you know, and you're beat up and your hands hurt and, you know, everything else. And they're over there playing kicking games. You know, they're going, let's see who can kick it closest to the end line, you know, and they don't do anything, you know. So it drives you crazy. I used to call them campus leavers all the time. You guys are can't. You come in for your morning meeting, then you go have lunch somewhere off campus. Like, nobody else gets to leave campus. You guys are campus leavers. Yeah, it's jealousy. It's pure jealousy. You don't beat the snot out of one another. And in my day, the deep snapper had a practice. Like, he had to play another position. Now the deep snapper is a specialist. So they don't do anything but deep snap. So the three of them, the punter, the deep snapper, the kicker, are all lollygag around and play around and goof around. They're playing kicking games, and they're over in the corner doing whatever it is they do. And sometimes you look over there, and you're having a tough day at practice, and you go, look at those SOBs just having fun. Like, there's a jealousy to it that you're just like, I can't stand those guys. And you don't really hate him or anything, but you don't necessarily want to pick out curtains with him.
Well, until he misses three field goals, yeah. And then maybe the blood starts to boil, right?
Well, yeah. You know, I mean, you're supposed to hit those. And, you know, I'm sure they get along fine with the kicker and everything else. But I think a lot of that is their own issues, their own, you know, lack of production in the red zone. And some of those, you know, some of those frustrations boil over.
You know what, Mark, and Mark Schlereth is our guest here on Willard and Dibbs. You know what's funny about that? Like, I totally get everything that you said, and I really appreciate how honest you were in answering that. At the same time, you know this because you've been on both sides. There's this rub through the years between players and the media because players will kind of get to the point of listening to media talk about something and going, dude, you can't do what we do. You cannot do what we do. And I sort of thought about this in this dust up because it's like, can't the kickers, I get the jealousy, but can't the kickers say that too? It's like, you can out us all you want, but hey, Debo, you need us. You can't do what we do.
Yeah, but the issue is you don't do anything until it comes to that point. So make it. That's the issue is like, yeah. Dude, the only thing you do is kick. That's it. You don't put yourself in harm's way. You don't make tackles. You don't get hit. So when you're asked to kick a field goal, especially if it's less than 50 or if it's in the 50-yard range nowadays, you know, anything less than 55, you know, we expect you to make the damn thing. And so, you know, you can miss one every now and again, but you miss three in a game, and, yeah, everybody wants to kick you right in the yarbles. Yeah, that's how they feel.
Yeah, and I appreciate yarbles. That's pretty good. It's like it's a mix between somebody's nuts and their marbles, and it actually could become part of my lexicon. Mark Schlereth here on 95.7 The Game. The Niners have really struggled on special teams, punt coverage, kickoff coverage, the aforementioned field goals, and the rest of it. For a team, when you have these kinds of struggles, where is it fair to put the blame on the players, the special teams coordinator, the head coach, or all the above?
Yeah, I mean, oftentimes it's a bunch of different things, you know. Like, there will be times where, you know, maybe you're not getting enough hang time on a punt. And, you know, you kind of, quote-unquote, outkick your coverage. You might have a couple issues with blocking. So you take some of the speedy guys, some of the DB type of guys, you exchange them for linebackers, and the linebackers don't run and cover as well, you know. So a lot of those, there's a lot of little nuanced things when it comes to playing special teams. And then oftentimes, you know, if you have a couple injuries or some things happen to you, you know, all of a sudden you got to put a starter on there. So there's a lot of nuance to special teams. And, you know, let's face it. I mean, I was not going to make the NFL. I actually covered kicks as a rookie during my rookie preseason. So I was R1 at 285 pounds running down R1 on kickoff cover. And nobody blocked me the first time I ever ran down on kickoff. And I'd never run down on kickoff cover. Like, when was I ever going to run down on kickoff cover? But I could run. And so they put me on kick cover because I was, you know, wedge buster, so to speak. And I ran down there, got an assist, got a wedge bust, you know, got like the whole 9 yards. And I thought I'd made the team. Nobody blocked me because nobody thought, you know, 6'3", 285-pound offensive lineman, you're going to be able to run down there and make a play. Well, the next time I ran down, a little fullback, about 5'10", 240, circled and hit me right in the chin, ass over tea kettle. And at that point, I was like, worthless. I was like, if it comes to making special teams making this play, like, those dudes are straight up crazy. And I was like, yeah, I was the last guy down, man, head on a swivel. I was like, I'm never getting hit like that again. You can forget that. Like, I'm not making this team. They took me off about two games later. I played about two games of kick cover before I got pulled because I was done. Like, I ain't getting hit like that again, dude. Those dudes are absolutely insane. And so it takes a special breed to play special teams. We don't give enough credit to it on broadcast or anything else. You know, the only time you see it is when it's a problem. But it's not all it's cracked up to be. I guarantee you that.
Mark Slareth with us here on Willard and Dibs. Hey, Stink, if we're only going on the 9 games that we've watched this year, how would you grade the performance of Brock Purdy?
Oh, I think Brock Purdy's exceptional. I mean, I would give him, you know, I'd give him an A. I think he's playing really well. And obviously, you know, there's been so much with McCaffrey down and then, you know, and then the slow start. I mean, missing camp for Ayuk and the slow start and then the injury. And then, you know, you've missed time with Kittle and you've missed time with Juwan Jennings. And Debo has missed time. And so there's been a lot of, you know, there's been a lot of kind of exchange there and different guys playing. And so, you know, and still being as productive as you've been, I'm a huge Purdy fan. I think he's a really good player. So, you know, again, continuity becomes so important. Timing and rhythm becomes so important. And a lot of things they do in San Francisco in regards to that offense is really all based off the timing and the rhythm of that run game and the play action stuff. And it's precise, you know, from, you know, how you want to run routes, where you want to break those routes off at, the way you're faking a block, you're stock blocking a guy and then you're getting beyond him, and all the things that they do exceptionally well. And that stuff takes timing and rhythm. And that's where Purdy is so good at the timing and rhythm of that stuff. And if you bring in a bunch of different guys that haven't played, you know, it's hard to recreate that on a consistent basis. So they've lacked some consistency there, which has led to some turnovers and some, you know, inefficiency in the red zone. But I'm a huge Purdy fan. I think he's really good.
Are you starting to see that rhythm a little bit more cemented now that Ricky Pearsall has played a few games and McCaffrey's back, and certainly the connection that he's had with George Kittle?
Yeah, that and Juwan Jennings on third downs. Juwan is one of my, you know, guilty pleasure players that I love watching play because, one, I think he's a really good player. Two, I just think he's nasty. He's a tone setter. And he just doesn't try to block people. He tries to hurt people. And I personally like that from a wide receiver. And there's not a whole lot of them that'll do it. So he's just one of those guys off the ball, you know, when it comes to a route that's not coming his way. You know, I'll tend to watch guys like that and go, wow, look at like the block he threw on this run, or look at how he's running this route. He's not a primary on this route, but he's running it, for the love of the game route. He's just running it because he loves football and he loves opening other guys up. And so he's a guy that I really like to watch and that I really think is a good player.
Hey, Mark, just because we saw them last night, your ties to the organization as well. I really went from thinking I loved what Washington was doing, but I think they're a year away. And then a couple weeks ago, I'm like, oh, wait, I think they're going to win the division now. And now after the last few weeks, I'm like, no, I'm back to they're still a year away. What's your take?
Yeah, I think defensively, I think they're playing their butts off with, with kind of marginal talent. They've got some issues from just a pure talent standpoint. They went out and got Marshawn Lattimore, which will help some of that, but of course he's had the hamstring. He hasn't played the last 2 weeks. So, like, I think what they're doing defensively is pretty incredible, considering kind of where they were. And, you know, I've talked to Dan Quinn about it. So, like, I've called a couple of games. They're not where they need to be. They know that. But, you know, there's some non-negotiables when you play for Dan Quinn. That's playing hard. That's playing with effort. And that's, you know, playing smart football. And I thought they did that for the most part last night, you know, until they were just worn out in the fourth quarter. But I think what you saw in that game is there's a discrepancy from the top one or the top tier talent of Philadelphia Eagles and where Washington comes in right now. I think the other thing you saw is a quarterback in Jaden Daniels who that rib injury is still affecting him. And he can't do the things that he has done early in the season. They can't run him on the read zone stuff. They can't run him on some of the design QB runs. He doesn't scramble as effectively as he did. And there was a couple of deep throws, you know, intermediate to deep throws that he tried to pull last night that he dirted. And that to me is 100%, 100% because of that rib injury. And so I think that's hindering their offense. And that's a big part of this offense because I think after Terry McLaurin And, you know, I think they've got good running backs, but I don't think there's anybody else that really threatens a defense. And if you look at last night, McLaurin had one catch. Deami Brown had one catch. Zacchaeus had one catch. And their other wide receiver, the name is Noah Brown, also had one catch. So their four receivers combined for four catches, no more than 10 yards on any one of them. It was 10, 10, 4, and 4 yards. So everything was a dump off, which was, to me, part of the game plan because he's really struggling throwing the ball because of that rib. So, you know, they're limited talent-wise from a top-tier team, and now all of a sudden the one thing that's made them a super dynamic and offense that you have to contend with, their quarterback certainly can't do a bunch of stuff that they'd like to do with him.
On the other side, you have a Philly team at 8-2, and Mark and I talked last year about them being 10-1, and my partner said they're a fraud at 10-1, and he proved to be right. Is this 8-2 a little bit more real with more staying power than last year's Philly team?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. I think, one, Jalen Carter is playing exceptionally well on the front. You know, the front four is playing well. I think their three corners, like, this is crazy, but Darius Slay is their third best corner. Like, that Quentin Mitchell, he may be, or however you say his first name, is it?
Quinyon, I think, yeah? Quinyon Mitchell, yeah.
Mitchell, I think Mitchell is maybe one of the better corners, cover corners I've watched play this year. And I think that DeJean is really good. By the way, Iowa has cornered the market on white cornerbacks. DeJean is playing his ass off. The kid Riley Moss up in Denver is playing his ass off. I don't know what it's tight ends and white corners. Like if you want to become a tight end or a white cornerback, you got to go to Iowa. That's the only place in the world you can go and develop. But because that's what Iowa does. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like Maryland crab cakes. You know, it's like football crab cakes. That's what Maryland does. Tight ends and white corners. That's what Iowa does.
This might be my favorite take
ever. It's a good take, yeah.
It's a recruiting pitch at the very least for Iowa.
Instead of Kansas State being KSU, they could be KSU. Be Kittle, Seahorn, U. That's basically,
nice.
Those are the faces of it. Hey, great stuff today, Stink. Thank you so much for coming on as always.
You got it, guys. Take care. Have a great night.
There he goes. That was Odyssey NFL Insider Mark Schlereth, the host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise Mayo Game Day. Be delicious. All right. Few things still ahead.
Yeah.
We're going to get down to brass tacks with the 49er game a little bit later on in the show. There are injuries to discuss. I think largely it's a sigh of relief on some of them. However, there's a questionable tag on a lot of guys, key guys, going into this weekend. How does that affect Fade the Dibbers, FTD?
Yep.
We'll see. So that's still ahead on the show. Also, you had referenced earlier today, you sent a text message, then you left to go be a podcast guest. You came back. Turns out your text message had started a fire you didn't even know you needed to put out. That was based largely on something Jonathan Kuminga related. We will get to that. To also bring everybody into the room, though, we'll go here next. You came in today on the crossover wanting to talk about Jake Paul and Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
And I don't have a problem with the fact that people out there are into this. I'll also just admit, I'm not. All of that said, about a half hour ago, I received a text message that you're going to love.
Oh, I can't wait.
You are going to love what was sent to me.
L-O-V-E dot dot dot.
Yeah. With regard to this this fight. Didn't you come over to me about, like right before Stink came on, and you're like, your kids know about this?
Yeah, right? I would think.
And I'm like, yeah, they know about it. I don't think they care.
My kids were the ones who told me about the Paul brothers about 10 years ago.
Right. I got that. Okay.
Yeah.
Wait till you hear this.
I can't wait.
You're going to love it. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. This is Willard and Dibbs.
Willard and Dibs.
So what was on the menu? Seven steaks? Two whole chickens?
Well, I went and got a giant Wagyu steak for him.
So I'm ecstatic about that.
On 95.7 The Game.
All right, I want to give everybody the background.
Do it.
Okay, so during the crossover, you immediately brought up Jake Paul, Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson's 58, Jake Paul's on TikTok. All right, so then I'm sure there's some of you out there that are like dialed into this, and there are others who are like, what the hell, what is this? So you've got the Made for Netflix, I won't call it Made for TV, Made for Netflix event that is coming up later on tonight. Now, as you guys sort of like threw this out on the crossover, the very obvious question starts going around the room of like, are you going to watch this? And I was like, hell no. And Steiny, of course, is like, oh, see, you know, I knew Willard would be above this. I don't want, that's not,
right.
I'm not above anything.
He called you an adult.
He did. And I am. I'm an adult. I'm going to be 50 soon. But it's not that I'm above it. It's two things. I'm just
I love the young people.
Thank you, Grandy.
He doesn't love the young people, or he'd watch it.
Well, I don't love the young people.
Thank you. We'll rip Kuminga next. Anyway, no, I'm just not that into you. Number one,
man,
not you.
I was gonna say that. Is it over? Are we breaking up?
I mean,
oh.
I'm just not
it's
into
not me,
it.
It's you,
especially when there's a Warrior game on. But I made the comment that my chitlins are heading out of town this weekend. This is a very, very rare situation for your boy.
Yep.
They're going to see some family. I got one of them who's driving age, and they're off.
Like a good steak.
Right.
It's rare.
It's very rare. And so they're heading out, and I'm like, what? I got a house to myself. So I made the comment that what we're going to do both tonight and tomorrow is whatever the hell my lovely lady wants to do.
Yep.
Okay? So, of course, she's listening, and she knows how to push buttons.
Yep.
So she immediately is like, I'm so turning it on. I want to watch.
My girl.
Yeah. And I'm like, no, you're not. No, you're
no,
not.
No, come on.
No.
No, you don't. No, you don't. No, you don't. Sorry.
However,
no, you don't.
She also,
no, you don't.
She did want to agree with the fact that sometimes the older person, in this case Mike Tyson, an older in shape person, could still outdo the younger, not in shape person. Lovely Christie's 47. I think she could probably run circles around a bunch of 30-year-olds that I know.
No doubt. And she's very fit.
She is.
Based on her Instagram videos I've seen of her doing headstands and headstand push-ups and other things that make me get nauseous.
Things that I couldn't even attempt to do.
Make me dizzy just watching her sometimes.
Like, make me a reservation at the ER if I even attempted. So anyway.
Or a reservation at Inn at the Time.
I thought you were going to say in and out. Anyway.
Either one.
Anyway, they don't take reservations.
I'm going to eat it.
So that does sound good tonight. But anyway, that's the backdrop. So she's playfully texting me about that.
Okay.
You're over here doing whatever, okay, Jake Paul, Mike Tyson. Then Lucas comes in. Lucas is the director of sports at 95.7 The Game. He comes in during a break, and he sort of starts kind of quizzing me a little bit, like, how much do you really know about this? And he's like, I guarantee your kids know about this. Because Jake Paul, right, this is the fame is really based on social media.
Right. Correct. YouTube. Okay. It's a YouTube channel that he started 10 years ago when he was 17 or 18, and it's him and his brother, and they now have 50 million subscribers, and he is worth $80 million.
Perfect. So
self-made internet phenom.
So I said, there's no doubt that they know about it, but are they interested in it? That I don't know. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. I've actually been shocked at times at what they do know on social media. Over July 4th, did I tell you this story? I'm down visiting my sister on July 4th. My sister and her husband have done very well with their life. They live in a gated community in Orange County. And we're like on their block at a July 4th party, somebody's pool. Right? I don't even know. They do this progressive thing. We're bouncing around to different people's backyards. And there's this family in there. It's going to end up being a bad story because I can't even tell you the name of these people. But there's a family that just moved to the block, and the word that's buzzing around the backyard is, oh, they have a YouTube channel.
Oh.
Wait a minute. That's what they do? They have a YouTube channel. They've just gated community in Orange County. How'd they afford that? They have a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
This family, and it's mainly the mom, and she makes little dollhouses with the kids and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
I'm like, yo, you're talking gibberish. Like, whatever. I get it. But, I don't know who these people are. Hi, my name's Mark. Shake your hand. I'm not starstruck by you. I got no idea what the hell's going on. Well, the kids weren't at the party. When I told them, when I got home that night, I go, hey, Ella, 15-year-old daughter, you ever heard of beepity boppity boop? Jaw hits floor. You met them at a party? She was beyond starstruck. So, yes, the teenagers are all tapped in on crap that the parents don't know about. That's the norm. So, flash forward an hour later. I just got this text from Christy. Her daughter, who's also in high school, texted her and said, hey, tonight, there's a really popular boxing match happening, and a bunch of my friends are all going to watch it together at our friend's house. Just wanted to text and see if we could get dominoes so that you could send that to us while we watch the fight.
There you go. And this is the 17-year-old or the 15-year-old daughter? Not that it really matters.
No, the younger one.
Okay.
She's not quite 15 yet, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. And I'm just thinking about how I learned about the Paul brothers, and you go back to 2013, back when Vine was the thing, and there was, you remember Periscope, which was like one of the first live things you would do, and then Vine kind of took... Periscope eventually turned back into Instagram, and Vine eventually got usurped by YouTube. But back in 2013, so at that time, my kids were 12 and 10. Now they're 23 and 21. So these guys have been around doing this for that long. So in a certain demographic, the name Jake Paul is a big deal. And then on the other side, people our age, Mike Tyson, a 58-year-old who we all remember as the most ferocious boxer ever. And then his... you know, very infamous plunge into prison.
Sure.
And then Buster Douglas, and then never really fulfilling his promise after that. So you've got a 58-year-old boxer, legit, who we all know, old guys, and a 27-year-old internet phenom turned boxer, who they all know, a 58-year-old fighting a 27-year-old. And the other piece of it is, this is not pay-per-view, this is on Netflix. So if you have Netflix, and we all have Netflix, it becomes a free thing. Now, it would be interesting to know if they would have gone the pay-per-view route, and this fight was $89.95. Well, is the lovely Christie's daughter and her friends throwing in $10 a piece?
Definitely not.
Exactly.
Definitely not.
So this becomes part of the story.
Sure.
58 against 27, old school, new school, Netflix, boxing. And I wonder about, like, true boxing fans. If you're a boxing aficionado, you look at this and you go, well, this is a joke.
It's a total joke.
Neither one of them is really a boxer, but as an actual entertainment thing, a spectacle, this is a real thing.
And that's why I kind of, like, feathers got ruffled, and I know he was kidding when Steiny said, I'm above it. I don't want to do that with the way... like, people consume entertainment.
Right.
I get it. Like, I don't ever want to sound like that. Brr, these days. Like, you don't know how, you know, we used to do it back in the day. Like, you're entertained by what entertains you. And that obviously is always constantly changing. So, if this is grabbing people's attention, it's grabbing people's attention, and it's brilliant for what you just laid out, which is kind of like, I could almost see house parties popping tonight, and like, it's teenagers versus, you know, their parents.
Their parents, yeah, exactly.
It's teenagers versus their parents. That's sort of what tonight is. And so that's fine. I get it. But I am fascinated by this idea that it sounds like there are some people who are almost really attached in a rooting sort of a way. And Guru was one who was really sort of like, Mike's got a reputation to uphold here. And that's funny to me. Mike Tyson, ear-biting, prison-going, hangover-appearing. There's no reputation to uphold at all. At all.
Well, the funny thing
he's
about
that... He's a 58-year-old, let's be honest, maniac. Like, absolute maniac, and that's fine because he's a boxer. A lot of professional athletes are crazy people. You have to be. So this isn't me taking a shot at Mike, but this idea that there's some sort of standard that needs to be upheld. It has been a long time since Mike Tyson was like a legitimate athlete that people looked up to and needed sort of a performance from to hold him up to that athletic standard.
Agreed.
That, I don't think that to me, that doesn't exist anymore, which is why I'm not tied to the outcome at all. If it's entertaining in some way, if people are into it, if it were on in the background or if it were at a sports bar, I'd look at it. But the outcome, I don't even know if I'll buy it when it happens, the outcome.
Well,
how do we know this is not fixed?
Well,
this is screaming fixed.
And here's my take on that part of it. Whether or not it's fixed, I do think that the result will set this up for a rematch because this is too good. It's too good. You mentioned Mike Tyson as a legitimate athlete. His last bout, June 11th, 2005, he lost to Kevin McBride.
Who?
Kevin McBride.
Isn't he the tight end for the Cardinals?
He's on my team.
Okay.
That's the other McBride.
Okay.
But prior to that, he lost to Danny Williams. Yeah, thank you. And he had beaten Clifford Etienne before that. Your point is well taken.
He's on Christie's fantasy team, the running back
for
the Jags.
And he's also a running back on Georgia who won't play this weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
Etienne. But I do think it's fascinating because in this bout, Mike Tyson is the good guy. And this is a man who...
That's fine.
He climbed across a vehicle to punch Mitch Blood Green on the street. He went to prison, convicted of rape. He bit another man's ear. He has a face tat. And he is, as you mentioned, a little bit terrifying in many ways. Yet,
a little bit.
He's the good guy.
I know
in
you
this.
Heard.
And Jake Paul is the villain. Okay. And if you ask most people want Jake Paul punched in the face repeatedly.
I think Jake knows that. That's why Jake's in on the... How much are they getting paid for this, by the way?
I'll look it up, but it's eight figures. It's more north of $10 million apiece.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, for sure. It's big money.
I mean,
it's big money. And the odds, as I'm looking at the odds, Tyson is a 2-1 underdog. He's plus 196. Jake Paul is minus 245.
Why? That's
because
weird.
He's 27 and Mike is 58.
Yeah, but he's not a fighter.
Well, he kind of is. He fancies himself as a boxer.
Oh, great. Great. Not like a real one.
Well, he's trying to be somewhat of a real one. And on the way, he's taking this bout because this bout is big money.
Well, sure. This is nothing more than that age-old thing that people love to play with all the time. Would you get in the ring with Mike and take a punch for $10 million? Would you? Most people would be like, yeah, I would. And like, I don't want CTE. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's what Jake Paul's doing. Sure. And it's probably held a lot more than $10 million, to
Jake
be honest
Paul
with you.
Paul was quoted in August saying, quote, I'm here to make $40 million to knock out a legend.
$40 million. And what's Mike getting?
Probably the same.
Okay.
And, you know, it's being held at the Cowboy Stadium with a capacity of 80,000. And I'd imagine there's going to be a lot of those seats that are filled. It just reminds me a little bit of, like, sports as entertainment. And I'm thinking about Joey Chestnut and the hot dog eating contest, where if you think about it, it's a bunch of people cramming hot dogs and buns in their face for 10 minutes. And this is a former boxer, 58, against a YouTuber, 27.
Sure.
And this is the biggest boxing event of the year.
Well, but, you know, entertainment can be stupid. That's okay.
Yeah.
It is. Like, entertainment doesn't need to be highbrow.
And you know, high-level athleticism.
Like just because,
you're right.
You know, like a lot of people don't go to movies anymore. COVID might have killed movie theaters. I don't know. But if you loved movies back in the day, you'd watch a movie. It was so funny to me when people would be like, well, you know, what'd you think of the movie? Ah, wasn't very believable.
I love this take.
Was it the part where Spider-Man was climbing the building or the part where he flew over the bridge? Or could I ask you, should you have walked into that room looking for believability
right.
when you're watching a movie? Entertainment can be stupid.
Neo dodged too many bullets, Mark. I found that to be right. highly right. unbelievable.
That's right. Nobody bends back that far.
Yeah. I mean, you can dodge one bullet, but
what are we doing?
He put the stop sign up on 200 bullets. I found that hard to believe, Mark. And I do think that this is a fascinating example because Christie's daughter, a teenager, who probably has watched a grand total of zero bouts in her life.
The fun question would be, do you know who Mike Tyson is?
Right.
And I don't know that she would. I don't know. She knows who Jake Paul is.
Right.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station. Always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch, and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. For a low-rate auto loan, apply online or just ask for First NorCal Financing at the dealer.